Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to Text Message, the UK-focused technology podcast with me, Nate Langson.
And me, Ian Morris.
And if you're one of our patrons, this is your extended ad-free version of this week's show. And thank you to our new or upgraded patrons. I'm going to read some names here. Andrew Walker, Stephen Huxtable, Philip D, James, Richard Burkett, Mike Akins, Matt Oram, David Morris, Toby Roberts, John M. All have either joined us or changed their pledge level over the last week. So thank you very much for supporting us directly and also getting access to our new sister show, Extra Message, our live streams, unedited and uncensored versions and much more. You can join them by going to patreon.com/UK Tech. Thank you, patrons. We actually had the second episode of Extra Message went out yesterday.
I haven't listened to it. I didn't notice it was on the feed. I will.
I got some good feedback on that. We're talking a little bit about preserving family memories, intimate moments, you know, with parents, grandparents, and how to preserve those for posterity.
You're very good at that, aren't you? Like, you have a considerable photo archive that is, and video.
And audio. But very carefully done. Very carefully done to make sure that we're not drowning in,
well, yes,
vast quantities of content to the expense of being able to find the best stuff down the line, in not just in 6 months but in 20 years. Thank you to everybody who has been supporting us and getting access to Extra Message, and do check us out on Patreon if you'd like to start listening to it. Now, it's very rare, Ian, that I get to say that I sat through 3 hours of parliamentary hearings and found it broadly entertaining and depressing in equal measure, but that did happen this week. Neil Potts, who is Facebook's public policy director, but of course, we all know that, told MPs this week that Facebook struggled to identify the video of the New Zealand mosque shootings because of the use of a head-mounted camera by the gunman, which made it harder for its systems to automatically detect the nature of the video. Now, that obviously is the bit that's very depressing, that a live stream of a horrific act of violence could slip through detection of years of development of AI at the cost of millions of dollars is frankly too absurd almost to believe, and yet entirely believable. Sadly, terror footage from a first-person perspective, quote, was a type of video we have not seen before, Potts said. This was a first-person shooter video, one where we have someone using a GoPro helmet and a camera focused from their perspective of shooting. Now, I was writing about this for Bloomberg this week and covering this this hearing. Because social media platforms like Facebook, they've been facing a lot of scrutiny after the shooter accused of killing, it was dozens of people in the two mosques in New Zealand, had done so while live streaming these murders over the internet. And the company Facebook, certainly, and others, came under a lot of sharp criticism for not taking down the video fast enough. But this week, representatives for Facebook and Twitter and YouTube were called in front of a committee of MPs here in London to explain, in part, why their systems didn't work. They were asked why so much hate content also filled their websites still, and they were quite literally shouted at, Ian, for not doing better. And I thought, just before we continue with this, I wanted to play a clip to give you a little sense of how this went down. Now, the following is the sound of a chap called Marco Pancini, who is Director of Public Policy for YouTube, being interrupted by the Labour Party's Stephen Doughty. At the end, you'll hear Doughty flat out just completely lose patience at these three executives and pass back over to the chair for the session. Let's listen in there.
I'm sorry. But why is it that every single time all three of your companies appear before this committee, members of this committee, including myself, the chair and others, are able to find content within minutes? We're not talking about, weeks of research or looking for complicated hidden stuff on the dark web or stuff that's been altered. We're able to find stuff within minutes or seconds. I mean, I was able to find the attack video in Christchurch within seconds on various real platforms. This stuff, your systems are simply not working. And quite frankly, it's a cesspit. And it feels like your companies really don't give a damn. You give a lot of words, you give a lot of rhetoric, you don't actually take action. You don't even know that this content is on there. You've been fearing for us this morning, and you haven't even looked up the organisations that we've raised. It's all on there.
We need also to remember that there are 2 billion of users that come every month on our platform to find content, to learn something, to share something. Of course, this is absolutely a horrific issue, and we need to do a better job in trying to understand, and we are doing actually a better job in trying to understand how to stay up to the threat. For example, something that I would like to mention, since the last hearing, we introduced a team that is called the Intel Desk that is dedicated to make sure that we better understand the trends of violation of our policies, of far-right organization, of extremists.
Well, that's all wonderful, but they're clearly not doing a very good job, because quite frankly as well, I find it extraordinary that I can find all this hate content directed at the LGBT community on YouTube, and yet I know for a fact that you block and restrict a positive LGBT content by your own YouTube creators and block it so it's unrestricted, and yet last night I could find videos advocating, you know, violence and hatred towards the LGBT community. So quite frankly, your policies mean nothing because you're not following them through.
I would like to look into this content and come back to you in any case if possible.
I mean, you're all three of you not doing your jobs.
Strong words there, Ian.
Yeah.
And I think this is what doesn't get out into the media, just how heated these parliamentary debates and sessions can get when giving evidence from tech companies on why they're not doing a better job.
Yeah, but I actually do agree. I think the point that he made there was
Doughty, the MP.
Yeah, was really I thought solid. I mean, he said, look, every time you come here, you know, you deny that this is a problem, and every time we look on your sites, and we are able to find despicable content very, very easily. Mm. And I think he was fair in that he said, his point was that they obviously have a problem that they aren't dealing with. Mm. I don't think he was too harsh about it, but the point remains that this content is readily available and shouldn't be.
He basically said that they, you know, these companies talk too much rhetoric. They say, oh, you know, we could do better, we should do better, but actually they're not doing any better. And the companies say they are doing better and they're improving. And I believe that their systems are better now than they were, say, 6 months ago or a year ago. But the problem is, it seems to be, at least to my eyes, is that either the methods are getting more sophisticated of criminals, terrorists, or just, you know, people who are promoting this content at deceiving filters. Mm. And the AI and the AI systems aren't necessarily keeping up with the fact that videos don't always follow the same way of being shot.
Now, I was interested in that because what is the AI looking for in order to ban these videos?
Well, a lot of the time it's looking for, you know, it can do object recognition.
Yeah.
It can do, presumably, it can do faces and bodies and maybe some kind of actions and things
but
like that. Maybe words.
In this case, it feels like, gunfire, it's just horrible to think about, but, you know, you would hear, the noises you would hear in a video like that would match, even though the video is from a slightly different perspective.
Yeah.
So I'm surprised by the fact that the AI didn't pick that up. But I don't also think it matters, because one of the biggest problems wasn't the fact that it didn't get it the first time. I don't think we can criticise companies like Facebook and YouTube for missing things when they go out live. Obviously, there's some things that they could probably do to make it a bit better. But what I felt was it was more of the uploading that was the problem, and the fact that they, by that point, had a fingerprint that they could use of the video, and it was still getting through, and is still getting through. You can still find it.
But this is what came up with in the session with the MPs, is that it's very easy now for people on forums. 8chan was the one that was talked about in the session, because there are people that want to promote this video. They want to make sure that it goes viral,
and
they've got very ready access to tools that allow you to manipulate the video so the fingerprints don't match.
Mm.
You know, it might look like it's from the same hand, but it's not the same fingerprint, you know.
Yeah,
distorting it in some ways, changing the audio, things like that.
Yeah, but I do feel like that must be possible to improve upon that technology. Like, it can't be that different, otherwise it wouldn't be viewable. Like, ultimately, you know, yeah, I'm aware that there are some things that, you know, defeat these things. I presume flipping the image doesn't do that anymore, because it would be relatively easy for the AI to do one pass of it with you know, the right way and then the other way and cropping and stuff
well,
like
the,
that.
Well, the AI might figure that out, but fingerprinting on a basic level doesn't necessarily
yes.
pick that out.
Because, yes, it's because you're looking for exactly the same file rather yeah. than, you know. But I sort of wonder if there's some improvement that can be made there. But again, these guys are at the top of their field in terms of technology. So if anyone's going to come up with a way of doing it, it's going to be them. What I notice is that YouTube is pretty good at matching copyright on things that you upload, so I have a feeling that there is more that could be done here, but I think their focus is perhaps in the wrong area.
It's very different, you know. I mean,
there's not really any. See, the thing is, when it comes to money, obviously there are lawyers. So if you know, if I'm uploading a clip from a movie, you know, there are powerful lobbies in America that will, you know, sue YouTube because they're not taking action. It's costing YouTube real money. This kind of stuff isn't.
Yes, it is.
Well, it is.
This is definitely, it 100% is, but in a roundabout sort of way, because if advertisers are afraid that their brand is going to be associated...
I mean, that would be a disaster.
And it's happened. I mean, it's not just Facebook. It's happened on YouTube. It's happened all over the place. That they, you know, they will pull their ads. There were stories, you know, certainly around a year ago where repeatedly big companies were pulling their advertising
yeah.
from social media platforms, specifically because of this kind of issue.
Yeah, and hate speech particularly. And
yeah. I mean, you know, one of the big questions here really is whether the hearings that we're talking about actually do any good in fixing this problem. And that's why it's a story for us, because A, it's UK, and B, we're talking about this from the fact that it was raised as an issue from a consumer perspective. Like, it's a GoPro-type device
yeah.
head-mounted. You know, that's why it's relevant to us. And I actually wonder, when I see the European Parliament equivalent briefings, certainly when the ones you've seen in Congress and ones in other countries, I kind of feel that our government and... Our parliament is among the better groups
yeah,
that are holding people to account.
If you saw the interviews with Mark Zuckerberg in the US Congress, one of the things that struck me was that the questioning was very poor. The technical understanding of what Facebook yeah. does was so bad that it almost lets him off the hook.
I was monitoring those as well, and I mean they were. Just the most atrocious.
One of the ones that sticks in my mind was, you know, I use WhatsApp and I was talking to my friend about meat and then I got a load of meat adverts on Google. You know, is that you selling advertising data to, you know, thing? And Mark Zuckerberg was like, no, we can't read your WhatsApp messages. They're encrypted from your phone to the destination. We cannot see that. And then he went on again about, he asked a repeat question that was basically the same. It's like,
they're
clueless. You're going to go into these things... You've got to ask good questions. Otherwise, the sympathy kind of shifts and people are just like, oh, Zuckerberg's running rings around them and he gets plaudits for that, which are ill-deserved.
I mean, I kind of feel that these sessions, you know, particularly the UK committee sessions, would do more good if more people were watching these companies giving evidence under scrutiny.
Yeah.
Because they do seem to be doing a better job than other companies are doing, and they're asking the kind of questions that should be asked. And,
well,
you know, the thing is, I remember someone asked me once, like, how much good do they actually do? You know, because these hearings, basically, they're a way of collecting evidence and collective wisdom, which then get passed to government in the form of a white paper or recommendations for things like legislation. And the, you know, our government right now and MPs, they're particularly focused on tackling hate speech,
yes,
addictive technologies. We've talked about that in the past, on children in particular. And of course, there was the disinformation stuff, like Cambridge Analytica, which we've discussed before at length. But they are there for good reason, and the fact
yes.
is, for me as a journalist covering this stuff as well, it's very helpful, because you get pretty high level executives in front being asked difficult questions, and then I think it's up to us. The onus is on us to, you know, to broadcast that and to explain it.
I think they do some good, but I think their good is limited, and I think we've probably hit that limit now. I think that action will in the future will need to be taken. I think that it's going to take something like the British government saying Facebook is no longer allowed to do live streaming in the UK until it can show that it is able to cope with this stuff. And I think something like that, where it has a direct monetizable effect, will make companies listen. And also, I think that they need to have some power to call executives. I think there needs to be, because obviously they are powerless to you know, get Zuckerberg to come and answer for himself.
Technically, if
well, the only way they could do it was would be to arrest him when he came to the country.
But it's not a criminal case.
No, exactly.
If he came to the UK, they could issue a summons.
Yes.
And in fact, Damien Collins, who's the chair of the DCMS committee, has said that a summons would be issued if Zuckerberg ever comes to the
but
UK.
But he must have been to the UK.
No, not since they wanted him to.
Really?
Nope. Because he'll get a summons at the gate.
Yeah.
Potentially. So no,
does that apply? Does that apply if he went to Europe? Would he be able to get? He has to be in the UK. He couldn't have do a European arrest because it's not an arrest.
Yeah, it's not an arrest.
Well, I mean, I think from Zuckerberg's point of view, I think it's a shame that he doesn't take it seriously enough to appear. I think it's bad.
Well, I think we have probably covered that in enough detail in the past than to go into it again. But your comments on the hitting them where it hurts and being given powers to prevent broadcasting or something in the UK is a fitting place to end, and suggest that anyone listening with ideas on this or thoughts on this, or anyone who's also sit through these parliamentary sessions like I have, do let us know any thoughts you have. hello@techpodcast.uk. Fingers, Ian.
Oh, yes, I have several.
I've got 10. How many do you have?
Well, I have 8 and 2 thumbs. Is that too pedantic?
I mean, that's a level of facetiousness that
but it would normally be very fitting for you.
For me, yes.
Yeah.
I've got 10, mate. And hundreds of NatWest customers are going to be able to use those extremities.
Digits.
To pay for things over £30 for the very first time as of this week. This is according to The Telegraph, because the bank is piloting its first ever, well, the UK's first, biometric debit card. The newspaper wrote that the trial is going to allow 200 of the bank's customers to approve transactions over the contactless limit with the press of a button rather than a PIN number. The bank's partner with Visa and the Dutch company Gemalto. Have you heard of Gemalto?
No.
I have, because I have to cover them a lot, which features a digital pad on the card that scans a user's finger. Now, The Telegraph says that if the pilot is successful, the bank might roll out biometric cards to all of its customers, removing the need to remember a PIN altogether. Now, of course, this comes as we all march inevitably towards our phones being the only piece of biometric technology we actually want to use. So the question is there a need for this? And I turn to the only other person who isn't me in this room, Mr. Ian Morris.
I mean, increasingly, no. But I suppose it depends. From the perspective of looking to the future of contactless, this kind of thing would allow us to have no limit on contactless spending.
Yes.
So we would get away from the very, very flawed idea of signatures. I mean, I suppose that's already gone.
Unless you're in America.
Yeah. But, I mean, chip and PIN transactions aren't limited in their amount anyway, are they? It's only contactless that is. But does this work with contactless, or is it only...
It is contactless.
It is contactless. Okay, so here's what I don't understand about this. How does it work? How is it powered? Does it have a... Because I've read, like, 3 articles on this, and none of them has been able to explain to me how it works. Do you know how it works?
That's a really good question.
How is it powered? It must have either a power source within the card, because if it was chip and PIN and you touched it to authorise, it may be that it could take power from the reader through the chip. But in contactless, there is no power. It's a one-way RFID kind of transaction, isn't it? Where the antenna in the reader sends out a signal that is picked up by the card, and, you know. So I've thought this before, but I have looked, and it's not that easy to answer the question.
I really wish I knew an answer to that. Yeah. That's a really great question. I hate to be without an answer to anything, as you know.
Yeah. Well, maybe further research needed. But I mean, I'm very interested by this. And, you know, I think it's a really good idea. I love the idea of being able to get rid of that £30 limit. I like the fact that, you know, that it's a possibility. But again, the £30 limit also exists in most places for Apple Pay and Google Pay and Samsung Pay, although it doesn't need to, because if you go to certain places, Aldi, I think, is one example, I'm pretty sure they don't actually, the one near me, I'm sure, doesn't actually accept cash or something crazy, but they don't have a limit on Apple Pay transactions.
I've done some stealthy Googling while you were talking there, and I have an update and a correction to
make. Oh, okay, go on.
The correction first. It's not contactless. I mean, it is contactless, but the chip itself is powered by the terminal.
Right.
So it doesn't have a battery. It's essentially it's taking power from from the device,
which makes sense.
Yeah.
But so it's not contactless.
It is. I mean, they call it the first biometric EMV card for contactless payments. So presumably the actual power is coming from the terminal in a similar sort of like.
But why does it need to be contactless then? That doesn't make any sense. Because if you're putting it in...
Because then you don't need a PIN.
Right, so okay, fine. But that doesn't really...
I know what you mean. You could put it in the device with your finger on it.
But it will still have a PIN.
Yeah, it will have a PIN.
Yeah, so it's pointless. It's completely pointless. Because you're not... Because the only advantage to that system would be if it didn't have a PIN, therefore meaning that there was not... That we'd removed that very weak security that a four-digit number offers... and replaced it with biometrics. As it stands, there's no point because it still has a PIN, so you'd still be able to use unlimited spending on it. And if it doesn't work with contactless, it means it's useless in a lot of places where you would want to use it. For example, I don't know. Well, I mean, not useless, but say... I can't think of an example where you'd want to do contactless over £30 that wouldn't have a reader, because obviously the tube is one of the very big things where you tap your card on the thing and you just go through. But actually, that isn't ever as expensive as that anyway, so it isn't the problem. But this thing now feels totally pointless.
It feels like the kind of thing that would have made a much, much bigger difference a number of years ago, which I know we can say about a lot of technologies. But the fact is, this is for people who perhaps... don't want to add their debit and credit cards to their phones. Maybe they don't have phones that support it in some way.
Yeah.
Or they just want a simple solution to just get something from a bank for security. So I know that my mother-in-law doesn't like paying for anything under £10 with contactless. And I know that my wife finds that very strange.
I find that very strange. Surely that's exactly the point of contactless,
It is. And it reminds me of my mother not wanting to put her debit card details into Amazon for security reasons, but was happy to phone up a little store, read out all the digits over the phone for them to write on a piece of paper and lose.
Yep.
And apparently that was okay.
Yep. I think all the fraud I've experienced in my entire life has been down to the poor disposal of credit card details. I haven't had a lot. I think I can only really remember one.
Yeah. But my point is that it's technologies like this that for people who either don't feel comfortable with certain aspects of technology or don't understand it or a bit of both or some other reason, there is a legitimacy of that issue that perhaps makes a card like this a necessary thing to exist.
Yeah. So basically you're sort of satisfying their paranoia by doing something that makes absolutely no difference and has very little value. So you're essentially saying that this is going to make people who don't like the progress of this particular set of technologies like them.
Or can't. There are people who don't have phones with contactless payments.
No, but I'm not really talking about it. That's not really the thing. This doesn't really apply to people who are using contactless on their phones. It's not. It isn't a product that replaces that. It is essentially an attempt at better security for card payments.
No, I would say this is a replacement to the phone because the reason why you can pay for more things with something like Samsung Pay or Google Pay or Apple Pay is because that additional layer of security by needing a biometric authentication gives the bank the confidence that it is you using that card and not just someone who's holding your card that they've stolen against a terminal. That's why there's a £30 limit. This is if you don't have a phone or you don't want one, this allows you to break that limit but still just use a card in your pocket that could get stolen and isn't as valuable as a phone.
But you can already... there is no limit on a card transaction. If you're putting the card in the machine and typing in the PIN,
but
there is no transaction limit on that.
This is for people who want to go into a major high street retailer, pay for something that costs £500...
Yeah.
Has forgotten their PIN, doesn't want to type it in, doesn't feel safe typing in a PIN number with someone behind them, and instead can put their little finger, any finger in fact, over the little sensor and pay for their transaction.
Now I understand. Now I understand the very, very narrow 13 people in the entire UK.
200.
No. I'm talking about the number of people who would find this valuable. 13 is a number I've plucked out of the air. But I completely get what you're saying. I completely understand that there is a small category of people who will be, like you say, will not want to type in their PIN and will want to, you know, pay that way. I get it. But I don't believe that that is a big enough thing for this to be exciting to me.
It's taken,
therefore, I'm out.
It's taken... I'm Duncan Bannatyne. Oh, you're not Duncan Bannatyne, but you are Oot. It's taken a Herculean effort to get Ian from the point of not understanding to the point of understanding. I feel like an Adonis of information.
You are, and I think you've explained it very well.
I
still think that if you were going to make this useful, it would be for contactless payments. But obviously, that is impossible.
Which it is, for contactless payments.
But it's not!
Yes, it is!
You've got to put it in the machine to power it!
No, you don't! You have to put it next to the machine to power it. You can still pay for contactless without putting it in the card reader.
But that's not what you said originally.
No, that's why I had a correction.
Ah, I see. Okay.
You see?
So it is powered from the...
terminal, yes.
Right.
It doesn't have a battery, it works for contactless, it uses your fingerprint.
Then that's fine. I'm back on board.
Excellent!
Is it too late to invest?
No, once you're out, you're out.
Ah.
But I see Deborah Meaden lurking around the corner.
See, this is why I'm not a millionaire.
It's why you're not on Dragon's Den, that's for sure. You could be on, I don't know.
Whatever the £10 equivalent of Dragon's Den is.
Yeah, Nate's Nest.
Nate's
Nest. If you would like to pitch an idea for the princely sum of £10 of seed capital, then do send it to hello@techpodcast.uk. And in the meantime, while you're coming up with your groundbreaking idea, you can send us your thoughts on the story that we just discussed. Ian, have you ever been browsing a dating app and been sent a picture of a gentleman's trouser sausage?
No, I have never used a dating app.
Have you ever sent a photo of a trouser sausage?
No.
On a dating app?
No.
Okay.
But I've never used a dating app, so no.
Fair enough. Well, unwanted sexual advances are a daily reality for many people, women mostly, on the internet, and that figure only multiplies on dating apps. A 2016 Consumers Research study found that 57% of women report feeling harassed on dating apps, compared to 21% of men. This is according to a write-up on Engadget. But there's some good news here, as per the news cycle this week, because I received a press release from Badoo, which runs the Badoo dating service, as well as Bumble and Chappie and some others, which said the company's deployed a technology called Private Detector, as in it'll detect someone's pictures of someone's privates, I presume, and alert the recipient before the member is exposed on screen. And this is going to come into use in June. Now, a Bumble spokesperson told Engadget that the AI tool will also be able to detect pictures of guns, shirtless mirror selfies, things like that, both of which are banned on the app. Now, I think
shirtless mirror selfies are banned.
It's a really obnoxious photo style to have on a dating profile.
Why ban it?
Because it makes the app look seedy, maybe. I don't know.
Surely that's up to the people. Look, I mean, if I was a lady looking for a man to date, I would want to see the people who think those photos are appropriate, so that I could not date them. I think that's a great way of flagging people you don't want to date.
It's kind of like how when Kate and I are choosing a pub and a holiday to go to, if they've got like a Sky Sports here or BT Sports here sign outside,
we
immediately know that's the wrong pub for us.
Yes.
Nothing says don't enter me like a BT... behave. Like a BT Sports sign.
Your phraseology, mate, not mine.
But this is an issue, and I'm glad that it's being used. I mean, it's not something that I experienced when I was on dating sites at all, but which I did use a lot. I met Kate on one, you know, several years ago. But it's a good use of AI. I like this use of AI.
Yes, it's very good. And I know that women are made to feel generally unsafe on dating apps because they don't want pictures of privates. I mean, they might do it at some point, but they will let you know when that point arrives.
I would like to see the false positives of this AI.
Yes, but if you think about it realistically, it's not going to create any huge problems, is it? It will probably alert the person who sent the picture. We feel that this picture of you with a sausage in your hand is unsuitable for sending, and then you'd just be like, okay, well, I won't take any more pictures with a literal sausage.
Well, I actually have taken some pictures like that. I'll show you one that I took. I may have sent this one to you.
You didn't.
Can you describe for the ladies and gentlemen what I'm showing
you? That would 100% not make it through the filter, I'm guessing. It's a picture of Nate taken from low down. The camera's around crotch height, and intruding into the frame is what looks like a very meaty, flavoursome pork sausage.
From a chip shop.
Is it a saveloy?
It's not a saveloy. It is a chip shop sausage. So
it's colossal, Nate.
Double length as normal. Yeah, yeah. And you can see the pleased expression on my face as well.
I mean, there's a very pleased expression on your face. I think it would be possible to program an AI to know that that's a sausage, not a penis, because it doesn't look like a penis. It is comical in that it is long and meaty, but it doesn't look like a penis.
But the
Human would not make that mistake.
Well, true, a human would not. But the context as well there was that obviously I'd taken that picture deliberately. I think I took that picture actually to send it to my gran. Certainly she was in one of them, a previous one that I took. I'll see if I can find that as well. Maybe I'll share these with the ladies and gentlemen on the Discord if anybody's interested. But the reason why I thought it was interesting is that to an AI, maybe it would actually look like, I think it might look like what you what it thinks shouldn't be on the site because of the angle, the position.
Yes.
I was going to say the length and the girth. That's a horrible experience. Anyway, it was a way of proving a point. It's interesting this system exists. I'm glad that it does. It'd be interesting to hear if anyone's had any other experiences with this, of course. hello@techpodcast.uk. Let us know. Ian, in fact, do you remember that time that Rory... At CNET.
Very well.
He bought a phone.
He bought a reconditioned phone from Three, I think. I think it was reconditioned.
For long time listeners, this is our friend Rory Reed, who we used to do the CNET podcast with.
And it came with a free picture of someone else's penis.
Yeah.
And he wrote a story about it. And you can still find that story, I believe, is probably still on the CNET site somewhere.
You see, I remember walking back from the gents at CNET and seeing that picture on Rory's screen, and because he was editing it in Photoshop because he wanted to use it to illustrate this story. But I had to ask, why have you got a picture of a gentleman sausage on your screen? And he laughed, and then he told me why, and then he wrote the story, and then we all went for lunch, probably for sausage. Well, we unfortunately don't have any more time to get into the mailbag this week. We had some great emails come in from Raphael, from Nate Simpson, our fellow Nate, from Philip as well, and a few others. We'll get to those hopefully next week, but we went on for a little longer than I anticipated. But you can send those in for next week, in addition to the ones we've already got, to hello@techpodcast.uk. Thank you again to our patrons supporting us every week. If you're not a patron, we'd like to get our ad-free extended versions. Join everyone listening to Extra Message, which is on episode 2 now. Join us live and edited versions, all kinds of stuff. You can do that by going to patreon.com/UK Tech and help us finish this month of April with one more patron than we had last month.
Yes, and as Nate said, emails are welcome. It's hello@techpodcast.uk. And you can follow us on Twitter. It's @textmessagepod to keep up with the latest and most important UK headlines throughout the week. And thanks to everyone listening to us on our free and supported feed. If you've a minute to review us on iTunes, we would be very grateful indeed.
From me, Nate Langson.
And me, Ian Morris.
See you next week.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.